Raised Rowdy.
Welcome to the Raised Rowdy podcast. I'm Nick Tressler.
And I am Matt Burrell, filling in for our guitar hero, Kurt Ozon.
Yeah, Kurt is like officially out of pocket for like, I don't know, 2 months.
Yeah, that tour will do that to you, man.
Yeah, doing rock star stuff, you know. And our special guest, Mr. Wesco. Thanks for being here,
brother. It's me. Thank y'all for having me.
Yeah.
Oh, it's good. Appreciate it, boys. Good to see you. This was long overdue, dog.
Yeah. Hey.
Better
late than never, boys.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, we've gotten lucky enough to see you a few times. I think the first time I saw your full band set was at Tailgate and Tall Boys.
Yes.
That was 2 years ago, right? 2 years ago?
I think it was 24.
Yeah, it would have been.
Or 20. No, it was 25.
Oh, so it was last year on the Surfside stage.
Yes, on the Surfside stage.
Yep, that was very fun. And, I mean, of course I've heard your music before that, but getting to see the live set, and the, I don't know if you have the same guys in the band, but the guys you had in the band kicked butt that night too.
Yeah, they were great, man. Yeah, they were great. It was a fun time. It was really hot.
Yeah.
Really hot.
The Midwest isn't like we're here in Nashville, so the heat right now is scorching.
Yeah.
We were just talking, we're like, we have an outdoor show tonight, and we're like, do we go to that show?
Do we go sweat our asses off at Nissan, or do we just chill when we have an off week in between festivals? Because we're in festival season firmly right now.
Yeah, dude, y'all are going for it. My parents were just in town to visit, and I swear it's much hotter in Tennessee. It's much hotter in Nashville than it is in North Carolina, and that's really something to be said.
Wow.
Because, I mean, it's hot. I'm in the eastern part of the state, like amongst all the swamps, so it's like 100% humidity every day. And it's, I swear it's hotter here.
That's crazy.
I swear it's hotter here.
I'm of course a northern guy, as is Matt, so the summer is very much like what we would have in like spring or fall here.
Yeah.
So that is one of the blessings about festival season, is we do get to go back to the Midwest and stuff like that.
Yeah.
During the summer to get out of some of this 100 degree heat.
Yeah, dude. And have you been on the road a lot here lately? Like what's your summer been like so far?
My summer so far has been pretty light. I haven't played. I think I've played 4 shows, including CMA Fest. Mm-hmm. And I did a 3-day run with 49 Winchester.
Oh, what a perfect pairing for you, bro.
I love it.
What a pairing.
Their fan base is very similar to my fan base. So when I go play shows for, you know, 49 Winchester, it's like the rowdy crowd. And my favorite thing to do, doesn't matter if I'm playing for 49, if I'm playing for, you know, Warren Ziders, like if I'm opening up for anybody, I want to get the crowd like to a fever pitch where they're like really close to fighting, but they're not going to do it yet. Like they're going to wait like the 30-minute changeover, and then they're going to, like, just go crazy.
Yeah.
It's, like, my favorite thing to do. And I remember, you know, I played those shows at 49, and the first thing I said when I came out on stage was, you know, I'm going to play a bunch of songs that I'm not supposed to play, but I'm going to do it anyway. And that was, like, the roof blew off of the place. In all three cities, we did, like, Columbus, Cleveland, and Detroit, and it just like
three incredible markets.
Absolutely. I love the Midwest, just I mean, just because that market's so crazy. But no, my summer's been pretty light. I've been working on, you know, a thing since I moved here in October. So I've taken time off the road to write as much as I, you know, possibly can to finish this thing off that I've been working on.
Well, so, we know we just recently got the new EP.
Yep, so just got the new EP.
A little bit.
Yep, just got the Seneca Guns EP, which you know I thought was phenomenal. You know, it's under the title track Lies, right? I think it's Lies. I love them. A really good collection of, you know, just acoustic based raw songs.
Yeah.
Which is what most people know me for anyway, is you know, that acoustic thing, you know, the heartfelt thing, and those songs are all, you know, heartbreak songs and you know, loneliness and, you know, even trauma. Like Seneca Guns itself is about, you know, a lot of trauma that you don't really register. And, you know, I had to cover a Boss song in there. I had to cover a Springsteen song because there's, you know, just got to. You got to, man.
I was gonna say, like, listening to the EP, it almost feels peaceful, you know.
It does.
It's like I mean, different songs bring different emotion, of course, throughout the project.
Right,
but
yeah.
Like, if I'm talking about overarching of the whole thing, it's just like it seems cohesive and peaceful.
That's what's so interesting to me, man, is that, like, you know, different people could listen to a different body of work mm-hmm. and think, you know, completely, like, draw different conclusions from it. To me, it's, like, really haunting. Like, each song is pretty haunting. Even the way I did I'm on Fire, like, the way we put that together, I wanted it to sound more like, you know, not like this burning desire love song. I wanted it to sound like, you know, like this thing's really messing with this guy's head. I wanted it to sound kind of dark and ominous a little bit.
I love that.
Yeah, it feels like you're around a campfire almost. Like, yeah. It's that kind of haunting. Like, you're watching the show Hell on Wheels where they're, like, building out the railroad, like, going out west.
Yeah.
It's like the guys that are working those long days and then just sitting around the fire. Like, there is kind of that ominous feeling to
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah, man. And that's kind of what I've done for, you know, 2-3 years. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like the one song that most of these songs would be very similar to is one I released, you know, right when I first started putting out music, called Revelation. And it's mm-hmm. like, you know, that kind of cowboyish thing, you know, it's, you know, it was really cool. I love that project. I got to put it together with my buddy Forrest Finn, who's phenomenal. He mixed it up for me. And yeah, man, I'm super proud of that. Super proud of that EP. I'm always proud when I get to put out some music, because I feel like, you know, as a boy from, you know, Duplin County in the middle of, or Eastern North Carolina, man, out in the swamp. You know, me doing here, me being here just feels like, you know, I'm playing with house money.
Yeah.
So I'm,
yeah,
you know,
seriously.
Any project I get to release, I'm like, this is,
it's like you won some money at that Cherokee casino.
Literally, yeah, dude. It's a lot, you know, it's just playing with house money, man. It's like, you know, I don't really feel like I'm supposed to be here anyway. You know, like, by some crazy, you know, coincidence or by happenstance, you know, and I'm here and now I get to do this thing, and I'm like, you know what, this is pretty sick. It's a pretty cool job, man.
I think it's one of the coolest ones, and honestly, I feel like that's pretty common with people. Like, we get to interview a lot of people. It's like every person that's kind of living their dream feels like they're kind of like in the Matrix, or they're like, like, they're like, when are the everyone going to figure this out?
Yeah, you know? That, which is how we feel with what we get to do with Raised Rowdy.
Right, like, yeah.
We're just
yeah.
guys that love country music and love rock music and love live music. And now we're getting to do all kinds of stuff, man. What have some of the pinch me moments been for you in going back to the Carolina days, or even since you've moved out here?
I think the biggest pinch me moment would be, like, you know, the whole thing surrounding the hurricane hitting Western North Carolina, Helene. Yeah. And that whole thing was, like, the biggest pinch me thing I've ever experienced. You know, Luke Combs literally calling my phone. Like, you know, hey, man, this is Luke. And I'm like, oh, my God. You know, and I get to go and hang out in his green room and, like, see Randy Travis meet Keith Urban, you know. And, like, I was there with my manager and my girlfriend, and we were watching Eric Church's set, because I'm a massive Eric Church fan. You know, just being from North Carolina, by default, you're pretty much like an Eric Church
fan. You're born into it.
Yeah, you really are, man. And, you know, we sat up there in a little, like, tucked away spot, and we just watched it. And I literally, like, sat there and cried. Like, I was, like, in tears crying watching this set. And my manager was like, dude, what is wrong with you, man? And I'm like, I never thought this could happen to me. And, like, I just, like, kind of sit there and I realize, like, the gravity of this thing that I'm doing. Like, you know, 80,000, like, heartbroken people, you know, there for their state. And I'm thrown in there in the mix of it all, you know, shaking hands with literally, like, my heroes. My parents they were watching. My mom was back home, and she was watching on TV, and she, like, screenshotted the moment I shook Eric's hand, and it's framed and on the wall in the house now. You know, it, like, living the moments that, like, you know, your family hangs on their wall, and, like, knowing that you're living those moments is, like, the craziest thing to me.
I love it.
You know, it's truly insane. But now that I live here, man, I kind of have pinch me moments, like, every week, every day. You know, like, in this, the new thing I'm working on, I guess I could just say, you know, I'm doing an album, my debut album. And, you know, in working on this thing, like, I'm literally working, writing songs with the people that wrote the songs that made me who I am.
Yeah.
Which is, like, insane. Like, I never would have ever bet, you know, when I was back home, when I was, like, in college or running a hydro seeder, I never would have ever pegged that this would be a thing that I could do. Like, it was never on my bingo card. Like, you know, sitting down, writing with Luke Laird or, you know, Liz Rose or, you know, any of these people, like Rustin Kelly, like a guy I listen to on my phone. Like, when I get in my truck, I put on his music. like writing, like with all these people to achieve this ultimate gain of like having the most badass debut album anybody could ever imagine. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like this is like, you know, I'm more proud about this project, this thing I'm doing, like this new sound, this new direction I'm taking this thing. I think I'm more proud of this than I've ever been proud of anything that I have ever done. Like, wow. This is like the thing that, you know, and I'm like so excited about it. And, you know, it's just like literally the coolest job, the coolest thing that anybody can do.
Let's go.
Before you moved to town, were you mostly like solo writing, or did you come like sneak into town and co-write or write?
Yeah, most of my stuff was solo written, unless I had a cool idea that I would set aside for like a certain pairing, because I love to do that, man. I love to take like a hook or a title or whatever, and, you know, set it aside in my mind or in my notes to write this with this pairing I have coming up, or even like a dream pairing. Like, if I ever get to write with this person, I'm gonna write this song with this guy. And so I approached some of it that way, but most of the time before I moved here, I was solo writing. And yeah. I wrote Helene with a buddy of mine, JD Williamson, and JD was pretty much like the only songwriter that, you know, lived around me within like 30 or 40 miles. Mm-hmm. You know, so like you really didn't have, like I didn't have a whole lot of co-writers coming up, you know. Yeah. So I just kind of learned to do it myself. And you know, now that I'm here, those same principles of, you know, like I can do it myself, you know, and being able to, you know, do the thing, I feel like it makes your co-writes a lot better.
Yeah. I think it's always interesting too, because, like, I mean, Nashville, of course, is like a co-writing mecca. Right?
Yeah.
That's, you know, and there's other ones in different industries, but like for country music, this is kind of where it is. But it's always interesting, like, hearing people go from co-writing to, or excuse me, going from solo writing to co-writing.
Yeah.
And the experience of like how it's a different muscle. And,
it is.
How has it been? I mean, of course, like you talked about a little bit, just like letting people into your world.
Yeah. You know? I love it, man. It is such a truly different experience, but I love like the thought of having different hearts in on this thing, because in every song I've ever written, there's a piece of me in every single thing. Like, I've lived a piece of whatever it is in this song. Yeah. I struggle like concocting fake stories, you know, and like country music is such a storytelling genre. Yeah. And you know, and I'm sure, you know, like that's why I don't know that I would ever take an outside cut, because, you know, to me it would just kind of feel inauthentic a little bit. And that's not saying anything, that's not like a hot take on artists that do that thing. It's just me. Mm-hmm. You know, as a person, I would have a tough time with it. I love putting my stories into my songs, and it's really cool to have multiple sets of eyes, multiple sets of experiences and hearts like in on this project, man. Yeah. it's a really cool thing. It's a really, really cool premise.
I love that.
Yeah, dude.
If you're talking sonically, I know we talk about like kind of what you have been doing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're playing live? Is it kind of sonically different? Is it some of the new stuff?
Like when I played
49,
when I played CMA Fest, I played nothing but new stuff.
Let's go, dude. Let's go.
Like, I fit as many songs as I could possibly fit into, you know, a 30-minute set. And yeah. I just, you know, blast them, you know, as loud as possible. And when I played with 49 Winchester, like, it was all the new stuff. That's because cool. I'm so excited about it. And, you know, I want people to hear it. And, like, you know, I was promoting the EP at the time, and, like, I couldn't, well, there's, like, you know, I couldn't, you know, put out that I'm doing this thing, because, you know, Nashville and the music business is all about timelines. Like,
yeah.
You know, you have to operate on a timeline. So that was, like, me just, like, you know, because I've held on to this stuff. Like, I've held on to all these songs, like the best songs that I've written in my music career up until this point. Like, I've had to hold on to them.
Yeah.
And keep them close to my chest. But they never said anything about me doing them live. I couldn't put them on my socials, but they never said anything about me doing them live. Yeah. So I did them live.
Give it to the people, baby. Let's go. I love it.
No, and that's I mean, what a great way to express it, too.
Like, yeah,
really,
man.
Get to give the things that you felt the strongest about,
yeah,
that you're the most excited about, and give it to the people that are coming, and making sure that out of all of those people that are performing at a CMA Fest, they're coming to see you.
Yeah.
Those
yeah.
are your real fans, man.
Yeah, man. And it's so cool because it is sonically so different.
Yeah.
Like the songwriting is, it's like a more refined version of what I've done the entire time, you know, mm-hmm. just because how I write songs is deeply personal to me. But sonically, I've kind of been able to take it where I want it to go yeah. in like all these different directions. And it's, you know, it's cohesive, but at the other end of it, like it's sonically just like so pleasing to my ears.
Yeah.
Like now I have a hard time listening to anything but myself, which is really weird, but you know, like I'm making the music now, you know, that I want to listen to, you know, that I feel like's missing now. You know, yeah. like if you turn on the radio now, like I'm making the music that I feel like is missing, like people just aren't doing anymore. So,
that.
You know, I've kind of, you know, if nobody's going to do it, I'm going to do it,
yeah.
you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, dude. And speaking of a song that you do have out, I know we're talking about all the unreleased stuff that we're very excited
yeah.
about, but talk to me about Hunting Ghosts.
Oh,
it seems like that was a big one that kicked off the EP for you. So
yeah, man.
Seems like a special song to you.
Yeah, I love that song. I wrote that with Sam Backoff and Ned Cameron. And it's like, you know, that's the only time I've ever put the word poltergeist in a song. It honestly might be the only time that word's ever been said in a song. I know for sure country, yeah. at least, maybe. But yeah, man, it was so special. And, you know, every part of that was so fun. Writing the song was really fun. Recording the song was really fun. The music video was so fun. My buddy Sam Vince shot that music video for me,
yeah,
and that
Sam.
Was like,
we love Greywood's the man.
Yeah, yep. that was the most fun I think I've had on a project. My mom watches that music video like at least once a day or something, just because it's so fun, you know. Like, and I love, you know, having the ability and like the creative control enough to be like, hey, you know, I want to dress up in a Ghostbusters costume and film this music video
yeah.
for this really sad song, you know. And you know, Sam was like, let's go, dude. And
Sam's so talented. We've been chatting about like starting a project that he would like kind of like
yeah
be the head of for us, just like acoustic stuff. But he's just a wildly talented fellow and a fellow Pittsburgher,
yes.
which is great.
Yeah, absolutely.
From my same area.
Yeah, so. Yeah, man.
I remember like his work, even like when he was doing the stuff with Ian Munsick way early.
Yeah. Yeah, know? Man. Yeah.
Just such a talented fellow.
Yeah. And I got, you know, I got hooked up with him by kind of happenstance. Like I came into town one week and I wanted to do some short form stuff. And he was like, you know, the only guy that was down to like make it work, like make it happen. And, you know, we kind of hit it off then and he's kind of my guy now, you know, so he's great. You know, it's, I struggle kind of putting the things in my head into like a cohesive thing that people can understand. If it's not a song, I'm done. Like, you know, I can't explain it. So Sam's able to kind of coax those ideas out of me and get them into like, you know, a cinematic vision, which is really sick, really sick. But yeah, I love Hunting Ghost, man. It's one of my favorites on that EP just because,
yeah.
you know, and you know, I convinced Sam Backoff to sing the background vocals on that thing, which is great. She's got a beautiful voice and, you know, I just love the whole project.
What's the story behind that? Because you say these are all real things that you've experienced or seen around you. So what's
yeah,
like
man.
The real story behind that one?
So Hunting Ghost was like, you know, a good buddy of mine back when I was working, like his girlfriend of like 2 years left him. And he was like, oh, man, I'm just, you know, going off the deep end. And like he actually was like you kind of see it, you know, you kind of see it in his eyes and just how he like viewed the world. And, yeah, man, so I, you know, put that amongst, you know, everybody's gone through heartbreak at one point in time, you know, so, you know, everybody's had those experiences. So, you know, I kind of used him, sorry, bud, as the inspiration for that song, but, you know, and I wrote with, Billy and Randy Montana last week, and I was telling him, you know, God forbid somebody go through something around me. Like if you've been through something, do not tell me about it, dude, because I will write a song about it. I will write a song about it. I've got this song I put out last year called Hold On. And the first line of that like the first half verse of that song is, Daddy came from nothing and my mama came from money, but mama lost some money when she married that boy. Two pink lines, mama cried, you know. That was my parents. And like I remember I put that song out and I didn't really send it to them until I put it out. And they were like, dang, son. And I'm like, hey. You know, family history, dude. Everybody's got it. Everybody
yeah.
deserves to know about it. So, 100%. Hey, as an artist, man, you kind of have to do that. You know, if you like like, and I just love authentic songwriting. I think all the greats have done it. Eric's done it. Bruce did it and still does it, man. And like, you know, that's one of my favorite things about the business we're in is like, you know, it's just a lot of authentic stuff. People being vulnerable in moments. And, you know, if you're trying to connect with a fan base or just trying to connect with people, help people out, the best way to do that is, you know, just by being your authentic self. Cause you never know, like, what story you got, what thing you've been through could really help somebody.
Yeah. What was the first Eric Church song that like pulled you in?
Carolina.
Yeah.
Carolina for sure. He's got one on one of those earlier albums too called A Man Who Was Gonna Die Young. And like I still struggle to get through that song without crying because it's tough. I mean, that's a tough one. Yeah. And like once again, that's some of those vulnerable things. You know, that kind of thing is always, I've been a sucker for that sad stuff, man. You know, and attitude. I love attitude. I love somebody that's not afraid to say what they think. And like he did Country Music Jesus. I don't know if y'all remember that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Country Music Jesus and Pledge Allegiance to the Hag. Like, you know, that attitude, man, it's some of the best stuff from Eric was, you know, that those angsty things.
I always say, like, I feel like Eric Church is one of those artists that is way more interested in moving the needle 1%.
Yeah.
Like moving the needle in country music and in music 1% than he is about having a radio hit.
Yeah.
And just so happens that some of them are radio hits too.
Yeah. Yeah, man. That's kind of the thing. That's kind of the thing I've been going by. That's been my philosophy the whole time. And with this new thing I'm doing, man, that's kind of my thing. Like, you know, like I'm confident the radio will catch it maybe eventually. But if it doesn't, you know, it's all right. That's fine.
I always say that too. It's like, if you're cloning something that's already working right now, like you're too late.
Yeah. Right? And I also feel like it's just kind of a disservice a little bit to like your talent.
Yep.
You know,
and to the musical community, really. Yeah. They already got that.
Yeah. You know?
So if you are striking something that feels new or feels like renewed.
Yeah.
That's when you really see people move the needle.
Yeah.
I mean, just talking about country music in general, it's like, I feel like Luke Combs, of course, like has his huge moment, is still having it. And he kind of steered the genre that way.
Yeah.
And then other people started doing that. And then I feel like it kind of was sliding away from that like 2000s-y, 90s-y sound.
Yeah.
But then Zach Top came in with like a new version of that thing, like even more this side than that, then it was steering back that way, and it took the whole genre back that way.
Yeah.
You know,
it's so crazy, like the state of country music lately, like you know, because you can't really say which direction it's going. You can't really pin it down, man, because it'll change every year. Like I remember when Where the Wild Things Are came out, and that was like ridiculous, and Luke had the fast car moment, you know, and like that was crazy, you know. And Zach Top kind of came out of nowhere, dude, like riding this crazy, you know, Palomino rocket ship, dude, and just like took it straight off, man. And I love the thing he's doing. I think it takes a lot of gumption to like, you know, do that thing, especially like you got greats like Keith Whitley and George Strait and like Alan Jackson. Like, you know, Alan just played his last concert, man.
So great.
And like to throw your hat in the ring with those guys is crazy.
It takes some balls.
It does, dude. It really does. And he's killing. Like I've seen the guy live, and you talk about a guitar picker, man. I like, you know, hats off to him because I can't play mine like that. I go more by Willie's philosophy of three chords and the truth.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my thing. I don't, you know, I don't really go too far from that. If I do go too far from that, I just let, you know, a guitar player play it for me.
That's what you got the band for, bro.
That's it, dude. That's it.
No, it's just so interesting too. And I remember I worked at a record label for a while, and I remember talking about a song. And when it came out, they were like, yeah, we wouldn't have cut this song. But, like, now that it's so popular, we would cut things similar to it. Now we know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
man.
It's, like, it's an interesting thing. That like, the right song from the right artist can unlock new things that can work in the genre.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, you just have to, like, not be scared to bet on yourself,
yeah,
and just do this thing, man.
What
like
feels like you,
yeah, yeah, man. You got to be like, what is the most authentic to yourself, and you just got to run with it. Like you just got to go as far as you possibly can with this thing. You know, because that, in the end, like, that's what's going to make you happy.
Yeah.
Is you expressing who you are as, like, a person. And if, like, you know, that, like, nostalgic thing is what speaks to you, man, then by all means, go for it. Chase it till the wheels fall off. Because anything else is just going to be, like, you know, kind of a disservice a little bit, you know, to your talent, to the talent God gave you when he put you on this thing. And I'm, like, I'm a full believer that, you know, you're put here to do certain things.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I just, you know, stuff like that is really impressive for people that can do it and do it really well.
Yeah.
And bring it back.
And it breaks through.
Yes. You know?
Like,
that's
like the music breaking through, because there's so much great music.
Yes. I
mean, there's so much bad music too, but there's so much great music.
There's a lot of songs coming out every week, dude. It's exhausting. We're, there's like, so many.
Yeah. We're oversaturated, I think.
It's tough. Yeah. It's the gate of entry is lower, which is great because it gives the ability for someone to come in and break the mold.
Yeah.
But it's also just like, I don't know if it's Suno demos.
Like, I came in at that time too, though. Yeah. Like, I came in during the COVID era.
Yeah.
Like, when literally everybody else came in. Yeah. You know, like, that's...
It's just like, you really have to do your work to break through. Now.
Yeah.
Because there is so much. And even the artists that are like, have been putting out songs for a while, it's like, it's tough. And like, touring's tough.
Yeah.
I mean, the gas costs more money. The hotels cost more money. The clubs aren't getting as many people in there drinking.
Yeah.
So they can't pay you as much. It's tough.
Yeah, it is. It can be tough out there, man. And it's, you know, once again, you just like, especially like if you're, I think if you're at like my point in the journey, this is like the time that would either make you or break you.
Yeah.
Like, this is a point where people would tend to quit and go home.
Right.
But, you know, I was, you know, my parents raised me to do this thing and be the best at it or don't do it at all. And, you know, I don't quit. I refuse to quit. So we're kind of in that space where I'm just like, I've locked in on this thing that I'm doing, man, which is a little bit of that nostalgic feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, I wouldn't call it country. I mean, it definitely is, but it's like more that Heartland thing, man. It's like that thing Bruce did that was so magic for him, man. And like, superstars nowadays have kind of tapped into that thing. Eric did it, blew up for him. And like, love him or hate him, Zach Bryan did it too.
For sure.
Like, he did that thing, man. And it's just that authentic feeling. And that's, you know, that's the thing that's always spoke to me.
Zach's music for me didn't really speak to me, and then I saw the live show and I was like, oh,
live show's crap. Next level.
We saw our first Zach Bryan show together down in Auburn, like, that had to be like 2 years ago now.
Yeah,
and it was nuts.
I caught him live here in Nissan.
Yeah,
and like, I'll never forget leaving that concert. I was fired up. I was like, that's what I want, that's what I'm gunning for. And like, you know, there are nights where I literally just can't sleep just thinking about it. Like, you know, I want that thing. Like, he's got the thing, and you know, he's got that audience. And like, I remember I left that concert, man, I was fired up. Like, I didn't sleep that night. I was like, I want that thing. Like, that's what I want.
Him ending on Revival will do that to you.
Yeah, dude, it'll do it, man. It'll get you going. But yeah, man, it's just, you know, authentic. It's authenticity. People 100%. Love that. People love that thing.
And I remember, you know, Zach, when he was still in the military, just doing videos on Twitter and freaking YouTube.
Yeah,
you know?
Dude.
And people loved it then. They felt it.
Yeah, man. And like, when I first started, I would literally like get off of work and I'd come in and I'd literally be covered in like grease and dirt, and I'd be sitting in front of the cameraman and just like pouring my angsty 21-year-old heart out to this thing. And people love that thing, man. People just want you to be yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, I'm really in the span now where that's all I want to do is that. Yeah. I just want to be who I am. And you know, the music I did at 21 isn't exactly who I am at 26. You know,
right.
I've grown up some. Not much, but I've grown up some. I've grown up enough to the degree that, you know, the music would sound different. So, you know.
What is your relationship like with social media? Like, how do you think about it?
Because it's a part of your journey.
Yeah, it is, man. It's just one of those things that you have to do nowadays. Mm-hmm. It can be great. It can be not great at sometimes. My management team has heard me complain about it more often than they've heard me be like, oh, great, this is awesome, man. It's just one of those things. It's one of those things you got to do. And if you're going to be in this business, you got to do it, and you got to teach yourself to love it. And, you know, because it genuinely is part of this business.
Yeah.
I think we're out of the days now where you can just go cut your teeth at a bunch of bars. I think you got to do it all. I think you got to go play shows. I think you got to do the social media shoots.
Yep.
And I remember when TikTok first came out, man, there was an actual debate in the music business of whether this was the way to go, or do you just play shows and do it the old fashioned way. But I think, you know, we're in the span now where you got to do it all.
Yeah.
I mean, as an artist, you got to wear all the hats.
Yeah.
You got to be your own, you know, social media guy. You got to write your songs. You got to go play the shows. You got to do it all, I think.
Well, and I think the way you're talking about it is a great part of it, because it's very much you have to want it.
Yeah, you and have to.
In this interview, you can tell how much you want it.
It tears me up.
Right, which is great.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's super impactful, not only for you, but, like, the team that you build around you. Because it's hard to build that drive.
Yeah, man. And I, like, that's one thing I'm really grateful for, you know, in my management team. You, like, top to bottom, they're just as fired up about it as I am.
Yeah.
But, like, you genuinely do. Like, you gotta want it. You gotta want it enough to go out and do an 8-hour content shoot in the middle of the summer.
Yeah.
And, you know, you gotta want it. Like, you gotta want it. Like, when you're tired at the end of the day, you've been writing all day long. And, like, you're jumping through the mental gymnastics that is a songwriter. You know, like, you gotta want it enough to go home and sit in front of your camera on a tripod, dude, and record a video. Even if you don't feel like it, you gotta do it.
Do you go live a lot?
No, I don't. I should. That's one thing I lack on.
I think, in my opinion right now, lives are, like, the freest candy that there is.
Yeah, yeah.
We've seen people in town that have grown large followings from, like, based directly on lives, not even having videos really pop.
Yeah.
You not know? Even having songs pop, just them going on live and for, like, a couple hours on any given weeknight. And then there'll be, like, thousands of people in there.
Yeah.
And they'll be latching onto them. And they don't just become a fan of your music. They become a fan of you, Wes.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't know why. Like, I've just struggled with it. I've gone live, you know. I used to pop in. Like, there were some guys I used to know that would do, like, TikTok writers rounds. Yeah. And I would, like, pop in to these things and just play, like, two or three songs, man. And, like, when I have gone live, it's always done pretty well for me. I just, like, for some reason, you know, in like, concocting this thing that I'm doing, it's, for some reason, it's fallen on the back burner. Shouldn't be. I do encourage people to go live as much as possible. I think, but I just, like,
one of the things too, like, when you are live, they know it's you.
Yeah, 100%.
They get to see a little bit of who you are.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Even, like, I always, like, talk back to, like, Ella Langley putting on her makeup on lives.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, she's going to have to put her on her makeup either way.
100%. You know? Yeah. Like,
if she's doing it on live, she's multitasking. But it's also, like, you get to see Ella Langley go from having a regular face to stage Ella.
Yeah, yeah.
And you get to watch that journey happen multiple times.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a fan and you're paying attention to her things.
Yeah, man.
But also, like, I mean, the songs, like, it's interesting to see what people ask you to play, because it's usually covers, right?
Yeah. But
it's interesting to see what they hear from you and you play your original, and then what they want to hear you sing also.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it's like, I'm like, oh, how did they get there from this? Is that just their favorite song? Or did they hear something in this voice that made them think they this person should play that song?
Yeah, man. I remember, like, even when I've done live shows, there's always somebody, like, when I've done lives and when I've done live shows, like, there's always somebody that asks for, like, a really deep cut song.
Yeah.
Like, the first song I ever put out. I played a show in Houston, Texas one time. And there was this guy at the background, like, at the back of the venue, and he was, like, holding up his phone. And his phone said, "No Surprise." And "No Surprise" is literally the first song I put out. I used, like, DistroKid to put it out. I recorded it in my buddy's shack behind his house and put it out. And this guy wanted to hear that song, and I didn't even know the words. Because that song, at this point, is, like, 5 years old. Right. And I've never once ever played it live. And I'm like, geez, dude. So, I also feel like it's a, like, it allows your fans to hear the songs that they don't hear anymore, because you've moved past it, you know.
Yeah.
And, like, they obviously haven't forgotten about it,
right?
Like, I'll have people asking me to play Burning House. I did that cover in like 2022. And, you know, like, people ask for that all the time. I don't necessarily do it, but they ask, you know, and that, you know, it also, like, it allows your fans also to feel like they, like you said, like they're getting to know you a little bit more. You know, they get to talk to you one-on-one. And that's my favorite thing about playing live shows is, like, after the fact, you know, during the changeover period, like, I literally, like, I always insert myself into the crowd because, like, I want to talk to my fans. Because, once again, playing with house money, don't feel like I really deserve people coming out to listen to me sing about these things, you know, but here they are. They're there at every show, and I love just talking to them, man, and, like, hearing their stories and hearing how, like, somehow a kid from Eastern North Carolina has impacted them in some way, you know?
Yeah, and it, realistically, it's those personal stories,
you
know? The things that we hear over and over, I mean, Matt and I probably have each interviewed over 200 artists or
I'm on like between college radio and whatever, probably close to 400.
Yeah,
like,
wow.
I've been doing it a minute.
Yeah, the thing of that you hear is the stories that are the truest and the stories that are the most real are the ones that everyone else hears something in and feels the most tied to it, even though it's not their story.
Yeah, like,
those are the ones that me as a country music fan, as well as the general population of people, like the stories that everybody loves a good beer drinking song, but the ones that are like a real true story are the ones that people take home. That's the ones they write the lyrics on the wall.
Yeah.
You know, that's the one they want that lyric sheet of.
Yeah. I'll never forget, man. I was playing in, I think it was London. I think it was London, England. I was opening up for Warren Zeiders, and I played this song called Too Young to Die that I had. That was really, you know, just about men's mental health struggles, you know. And there was this guy, and I picked him out. He was like four rows in. He was wearing a cowboy hat in England, which is like also one of the reasons why he kind of stuck out to me. And like I played the song, and I could see it kind of building up in him. And by, you know, the last chorus, he was bawling. And I like made a point to find him in between just to talk to him, you know, and he told me, you know, he came up after the show and was like, you know, man, that song was phenomenal. He was like, I've been having a tough year, and it was only like January. Like, it was literally like the third week of January. And I was like, this guy's like really going through it. Cause you know, he put emphasis on the fact that he was already having a rough year, and we were 4 weeks, 3 weeks into January. And I'm like, man, you know, and it's moments like that where that's why I do this thing. Because, you know, in so many instances, music helped save my life. You know, like music, like to hear somebody else telling a story and, you know, seeing yourself in that thing, you know, just makes you feel like you're not alone.
Yeah.
And to be able to do that for another human being is like, literally probably like one of the most special things you can experience as an artist, you know, just helping somebody. And like, you know, I've done that since I was 16, you know, in like my youth pastor days when I was going around the state of North Carolina preaching in church on Sundays and, you know, baptizing people. Like, I was doing that to help people, and I don't know that I've ever told that story, but there it is. I went from preaching the gospel to preaching a six-string gospel on a stage. So,
yeah.
But yeah, man, it's always, from the beginning, it's always been about helping people.
Impact.
Yeah. It's always been about, you know, just feeling like you're contributing to somebody at some level, even if it's the smallest one, you know, just feeling like you're contributing is why I do it.
Yeah, man. And the youth pastor thing, I mean, that's how FGL got put together. They were both leading worship at Belmont.
Yeah.
And then they got stuck together, and they got put together and started doing gigs downtown, and then that exploded. There's so many people that come from that worship background find their way into our world of country music.
Yeah, man, 100%. You know, I just didn't start playing until I was 20. I didn't pick up a guitar till I was 20. I kind of, you know, I did that till I was like 18, and then I started working a blue-collar job, and I was going to college, and I just kind of picked up a guitar as a way of like de-stressing a little bit, you know? So yeah, that was where it came from. Somewhere in between, you know, my 4-year history degree and preaching, I became a country singer, and much to my parents' dismay. You know, they thought I was going to be a lawyer, and here I am.
well, we're glad that you made that decision. Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of other people are too, man.
Yeah.
I'm sure the moments that they have hanging on their wall of you living your dream is all of the things they need, you know. They don't need all the people talking about you being a lawyer or anything like that.
Yeah, my dad, we went out. They came over just to spend some time with me this weekend, and we went out on Broadway. My dad loves it. My dad loves it.
Oh.
Just like the live music.
The chaos. You know,
yeah, the chaos.
The honky tonk. Where are some of his favorite spots? What did he enjoy most?
He loves Kid Rock's. Like, he loves it because they
loud
are
loud music.
Rocking.
Yeah. Okay.
They were rocking. My parents graduated high school in 94 and 95. Mm-hmm. Like, my dad's favorite band was like Stone Temple Pilots and Alice in Chains. Mm-hmm. So he like loves that thing. I drug him into Roberts, and I was like, these guys right here are like the best musicians you'll see in Nashville, dude. I was like, these guys are the real deal. And we eventually made our way down, but we were like sitting at Layla's because it had started to like just torrential downpour. He was like just looking at me. And I'm like, what's going on with you, dude? Because he's like, he's a cop. He's a game warden. He's been a game warden for 25 years, you know. And mm-hmm. I was like, what is he doing? And he was talking to me next day. He was like, yeah, man. He was like, I was just talking to your mom when we were at that bar. He was like, I never would have thought I'd be hanging out with my son in Nashville because he lives there and he does music. He's like, you know, I never would have ever imagined that would have happened. You know, so that was a cool thing, man. Yeah. But I've come a long way. I've taken a really weird journey to country music, but you know, now I'm here and I feel like this is where I was supposed to be from the beginning.
So you said your dad listened to Stone Temple Pilots and stuff like that. What about your mom?
She's Smashing Pumpkins.
Yeah.
She loves the Smashing Pumpkins.
90s rock.
Yeah, man. That's kind of what I was raised up listening to. We would go from listening to like George Strait to Green Day. And like she had this old like 99 Mustang. It was like blue. And she'd have me in the back seat of that thing, man. And we'd be jamming to George Strait and Alan Jackson and switch over to like 1979 or, you know, like it was a really cool thing, and that's really influenced how I see music nowadays. I kind of see it as like this fluid thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it really has kind of affected my, like, you know, my resistance to being boxed into like one thing. Mm-hmm. You know, if I can make a trad country song and then like a, you know, angsty rock song on the same album, I'm gonna do it.
Dude, the highway's wide enough. We're 6 to 10 lanes of highway right now in country music.
Literally,
you can go any lane that you freaking want.
Nickelback is country now. Like Nickelback would be considered country.
If the Eagles had come out right now, they'd be country.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Bruce Springsteen would be a country artist.
Yeah, country songwriting.
Yeah. If Kings of Leon can perform at the same concert that Bruce Springsteen and Zach Bryan did, bro, like this, we are in the world of country music right now is all encompassing.
100%.
It's kind of like a come as you are kind of thing. If you can sing and you can write songs, you are welcome here, dude.
Yeah.
It's kind of the, you know, kind of the thing.
And that's what I always talk about, like what really makes music country. And I feel like the lyrics and the storytelling is the thing that not every country song, everything is considered country, but like that is the closest beacon of what it is.
Yeah.
It's like that storytelling tradition. Probably some acoustic guitar's got to be in there.
You know?
You can put whatever else you want in it, but you probably need a little bit of acoustic guitar in there.
Or if you sound like me.
Yeah.
If you sound like me, 100%. Like I could sing Man in the Box, dude, and it would be on like all new country playlist on 100%. Spotify.
Yeah. My brother Steve is a big rock fan. He's like, he raised me up on Metallica and Queensryche and, you know, stuff like that. And then grunge rock too, but more heavy like before. He's like your parents' age.
Yeah.
So I've been sending him music forever.
Right.
And he just doesn't like that much new music. And he's not really a country guy.
Yeah.
You know, there's some country songs he likes and his wife listens to country. But the music that's starting to come out of like the rock world that is like country adjacent, maybe
Treaty Oak,
Fox and Veed. I just sent him the new Fox and Veed record, and he's like, okay, this is really good. And I'm like, damn, I got him, you know.
Yeah. My dad is a massive Treaty Oak guy.
Oh yes, makes sense.
Like massive.
If he like grunge rock and he likes country,
yeah, man,
mash that stuff up, baby.
I've so I've sent my dad some of my stuff off of this, you know, the new thing I'm doing, and like he's like, this is pretty good, son. And I'm like, hey, we're going somewhere with it now, man.
I think that's a cool thing, like you said, like Matt, like said, the lanes are so wide.
Yeah.
And the cool part about that is like, what's the mix that makes you?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, man.
And before it was like, well, I have to make country music because that's the thing that I'm doing and that's what my record deal is. This is a country. So I have to make. No, now it's like, do what you have in your heart.
Yeah, that's like the one thing, man. Like I've, you know, going through, you know, the past 20, 30 years, like you hear a lot of record label horror stories of like, you know, creative control. That's one thing I can say about Warner Records, man, is they have not once ever like suggested I take the creative somewhere or I take my writing somewhere, you know, then like, you know, that's such a phenomenal thing. And like on the new album I'm doing, man, it's like, you know, we're going to title the thing. I think it's like going by like codename American Dream right now. And it's like just that thing. Like, it's like a little Bruce, like you'll hear a little Bruce in one song. And then you'll go to the next track, man, and you'll hear like Diamond Rio, a little Diamond Rio in that thing. And then you'll hear Eric Church in the next thing. And they're just like all in for it because that's, you know, that's who I am. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like, it's such a great thing to be able to do what you want to do.
Yeah.
And the lanes are so wide that you can.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, you can do it.
Yeah, and it's important to have that team that wants you to be you. Like,
yeah.
They didn't sign a country. They signed you. They signed whatever music you want to put out. They got your back, bro.
Yeah, that's man. Huge. Yeah, man. And like, you know, I approached this thing much like I would have approached my blue-collar job back when I was working 50, 60 hours a week, man. Like, when I was doing that, like, that was my thing. Like, that was what I did. That was the only thing I did. I ate, slept, and, you know, like, that was it. Like, yeah. I was a hydros heater, bro. When I was in college, like, I was an expert on American history because I majored, you know, I majored in, like, history pre-law. Like, that was my thing. And now I'm locked into this thing and, like I'm, you know, kind of hammered in on this and cultivating this sound and cultivating this entire world and doing it with attitude. And it's kind of like I'm going to do it whether – you like it or not, you know, like you can hate it. That's fine. I'm still gonna. And like with this thing, you know, I've started posting some teasers and we're gonna get into kind of putting the new stuff out there, coming up this week. And like, it's like the first song I think we're gonna drop is literally like, you know, it's rock and roll, dude. And that's like one thing I really miss. You know, we're bringing back trad country, we're bringing back, you know, the old storytelling. What about rock and roll, man?
Oh, it's coming.
Like
it's
where coming. You know, I'm not talking like grunge rock, I'm talking like rock and roll, man. Like Georgia Satellites, the band. Like I'm talking like genuine like American rock and roll, dude. And that's like the one thing I've always loved. So, you know, I've kind of taken it upon myself to kind of save that sound. That's the premise I've come up with, like in writing all these songs, is to save the sound of like American music. Cause like you listen to Bruce and he would write a protest song that would become an American anthem. Like, you know, like Born in the USA, stuff like that.
CCR, like Creedence Clearwater Revival.
You know, Fortunate Sons is literally like an American anthem right now. And there's something so authentic about those guys. And like, I just love the way that they approached the business of like, you know, this, they found their thing and that's what they're doing. And I've really found the thing I want to do, and you know, locked in on that thing. We're gonna ride it until the wheels fall off and see where it takes us.
I know you talk about like, this is the thing. Do you have any hobbies outside of music?
No, this is my life.
Yeah, that's like, how this I feel is, with Raise Rowdy.
Yeah, this that's is where it. We're at. Yeah.
And like, I had a conversation when I moved here with my manager. Like I love to play golf, but like it's all kind of secondary to this thing. Like I live this, like this is who I am. Literally, like I think about it all the time. I write like 4 or 5 times a week. Like this is my life. I don't need a hobby because I'm living my dream. Mm-hmm. Like I'm living the dream of every 5-year-old kid playing an air guitar in the living room. Like, you know, so like I don't really need a hobby because this is like, you know, this is everything I've ever wanted to do.
I love it.
And I'm blessed enough to do it. So
hearing like that, I mean, it just makes me fired up, and I'm sure hearing this, and your team already knows you, but that's why they signed up to do this thing with you.
Yeah, yeah, I'm ready to run through a wall right now. Let's go. I'm ready to go.
Man, I'm just like, and like, it also comes to the point where I, you know, I have to recognize and realize that, like, none of it is done by my hands alone. You know, like, I give, in every interview and podcast I've ever done, man, you know, I have to give all the glory to God, because without Him, I never would have picked up a guitar. You know, like, it's just one of those things. Yeah. Yeah. I'd like, you know, to God be every bit of the glory, because none of this is by my design. I can guarantee
none
you
of
that.
None of us are here.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I can guarantee that. And I also have to be very appreciative of all the people that have kind of bought into the thing that I'm selling. You know, like, my management team and all of the songwriters that have been at this thing for you know, 20 years, man. Because, like, they know when they get in on a write with me, you know, a hit's not guaranteed. Like, I can't guarantee that we're going to go to the radio with this thing. But, you know, they're buying into the vision, yeah, that I'm pitching, the thing that I'm selling, man. Even the fans, especially the fans that have bought in and, like, see something in this thing that I'm doing. You know, I could never be any more appreciative.
I love that. It's art, man.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the songwriters are all artists. The people that are on your team all see great art and they want to be around it. Like, yeah, that's just how human species has been forever. And,
yeah. I'm just blessed that there are people out there that see the world in kind of the same way I see it. Yeah. You know, I mean, it takes a lot to buy into what a guy's saying.
They're dumping gas on the flame that you lit all those years ago.
Yeah,
you
know? Man. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I'm burning up for it.
I love it.
And there's a line in an old Bruce Springsteen song. He says, they say you got to be hungry. Well, I'm starving. I'm just about starving tonight. Is, you know, that's how I feel right now. Because, like, I've been ready to run through a brick wall for, you know, however long it's been since October. I don't know when this thing will come out, but I can guarantee you, you know, upon the release of this podcast, I will still be just as fired up about this thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, it's really exciting. Really exciting stuff.
I love it, man. I can't wait to hear the new stuff. I can't wait to honestly watch you even tease them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I wish I was at that CMA Fest show.
Yeah, dude. It's all right. There will be more. Yeah. There will be more.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, man.
Well, man, thanks for hopping on the pod with us.
Yeah, I appreciate y'all boys having me.
We love the music that we've gotten, and, man, now I'm even more stoked to hear the music.
Hey, you ever want to come back and throw it back, play around, or hop up at one of our events sometime?
Man.
We'd love a whole set of unreleased.
Hey,
West Coast songs.
I was thinking that driving here, man. Like, it's about time to run the rowdy round back. It's about time to run it back one time.
Well, we love it, man. We're big fans, and now probably even a way bigger fan, which is great. That's my favorite when we get done with an interview, making that the thing.
Yeah, man. I appreciate y'all boys having me.
Appreciate you, brother.
Yeah, man.
Cheers. All right, guys. Well, that's the Raise Rowdy podcast. Make sure you follow Wesco, all the new music, the old music, all of it. And check out his socials so you can hear all the songs coming out as we do.
Set an alert for when he's going to be going live, because it sounds like that might be happening here before too long with all this new music he's been burning up.
Hey, yeah. Only up from here, boys.
That's it. All right, cheers.